Chafei Amid Aleph in Chagiga.
25.83.
Bayu is 25.83, correct? Three lines in the bottom of the page. This Gemara is not so hard. Just to preface it. Okay. In the Mishnah said it then. Okay, we're discussing, in the previous Mishnah, we're discussing that Amiratzim, the illiterates, are not believed. Certain times they are believed, for instance, for Hegdish, for Beis HaMikdash things, they are believed, but not for Truma. But the Mishnah said that at the time of the presses, they're believed even for Truma. Why? Because we don't want the Kohanim not to have food. And don't forget, this whole impurity of Amoretz is rabbinic. Biblically, until something is Tameh, it's not Tameh. This that we make an Amoretz touching everything makes it Tameh is completely rabbinic. So we're going to learn a lot of dinim that the rabbis were much more lenient about because of the necessity. Because of necessities, the Chachamim were more lenient. So the Mishnah said a din that during the time of the presses, the Amoretz is believed even for Truma to say it's not Tameh. What happened, the Mishnah says, Avro Hagitas Vabadim. What happens if the wine pressing season, the olive pressing season passed, and now they bring us this Kohen, who's a scholar, a barrel of wine, lo yikabla nehimeno. You should not accept it. Because now already we assume it's Tameh. That means, during the time of the pressing, we believe him it's not Tameh. But once the pressing time is over, so then we can assume it's Tameh again. So you shouldn't accept it. What should you do with it? Manicha legasaba. So the Mishnah is saying like this. The Amoretz leaves it for next year, for the pressing season, and then he could bring it to the Kohen. Why? Because during the pressing season, he's believed. You have it, Sheldon, 25.83 at the end. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to ask a very, very simple question. What do we say if you bring it after the press season? Don't accept it from him. Leave the Amoretz, take it home, let him keep it for a year, and next year he'll come and bring it during the time of the pressing, and we believe him. So the Gemara says, "Bo, me name it Rav Sheshes." A shaila was asked from Rav Sheshes. What happens? The Mishnah says a kohen should not accept it. The Amoretz should keep it for the next year. So the Gemara asks, what happens if the kohen did accept it? He made a mistake and he accepted it. Can the kohen put it away for next year? Or only the Amoretz is allowed to put it away for next year? The question is, Mao Sheinichenu Legasa Bo, is the kohen allowed to leave it for next year's press? Or only can the Amoretz do it? So the Gemara says, so Rav Sheshes, Amaluhu, Rav Sheshes answered, Tanisu, we learned this in the Mishnah. What did he say? We learned it in the Mishnah. It says in the Mishnah as follows. Let me give a very simple introduction. It's a very interesting concept coming up in the Gemara. When a father dies and the kids inherit, so obviously you can't give, if you have two kids, right? You can't give each one 100%. So you have to split it 50-50. The question is, when you get your 50, does that retroactively show that that was your part or not? Because the truth is, everybody gets half of every cent, each one gets half of. Okay, but like I said, you can't give everybody everything. So you divide it 50-50. The question is what's called breira. Breira means it's retroactively shown that when you get it, that's what it was to begin with. And you'll see a very interesting difference. The Gemara is going to say the following din. A father, Amoretz, dies. Leaves over two sons. One's an Amoretz like the father, and one's a Chaver. Chaver means the Talmud Chacham. Now, the father, being the Amoretz he was, we can assume most of the things he touched was Tameh. But the son, who's the scholar, knowing that he has to be careful, would make sure that the father didn't touch half the stuff. So now when they divide it, half is Tameh, half is Tahor. So the Mishnah is going to say that the tzaddik, the chover, could take the untameh stuff and leave his brother, the Amaretz, with the Tameh stuff. Why? Because this retroactively shows this is what the tzaddik got and this is what the Amaretz got. That's only though if they're dividing wheat and wheat or barley and barley. So the chaver could tell his brother, you take the tameh stuff and leave the tahor stuff to me. But what happens if the brother, the Talmud Chacham, says, you take the wheat and I'll take the barley? That you can't do. Because when you inherit, both get the wheat and both get the barley. So you can't say, you take wheat, I take barley, and retroactively it showed that I was supposed to get barley and you were supposed to get wheat.
Even if they agreed, they're both
wrong. Doesn't matter. Yerusha, inheritance, is an automatic concept. No, they could normally divide it like that if they want. The question over here is Tameh and Tahor. Okay, let's see it inside now. Chavev HaMa'oretz, top of the line, and Chavev Amid Beis. One second. Yeah, okay, we're just starting. 50 in Chagiga, top line. Mamish, top of the page.
How about the English one?
25. We're 25B1. Okay, so it says, Chavev HaMa'oretz, if a Talmud Chacham and Amaretz, Yoshua Savi Amaretz, inherited from the father who was an Amaretz. Okay? Now, Yacholei Melei, the Chaver, the firm one, can tell the Amaretz, you know what? Terla Tochitan Shebamakim Plaini. You take the wheat in that place that the Chaver knows became susceptible to Tumah. Vani Chitan Bamakim Plaini. And I'll take the wheat in the place where I want, that I know never became Tomei. Because I was careful to make sure they never became susceptible to Tumma. Or he could say, Tel ato yayin shebamokim pleini. You could take wine in this location. Vani yayin shebamokim pleini, and I'll take the wine in this location. That's not a problem. And we said why? Because retroactively, it shows this was yours and this was his. Now, because there's a din that you can, okay, well, we'll see in a second. But what happens? The chaver cannot tell his brother dama aretz till atolach. You take liquids, vani yavish, and I'll take dry foods. Or he cannot say to him, Tel atochitim, you take wheat and I'll take barley. Why? Because there's a din like this. You're not allowed to, there's a din, a Talmud Chacham is not allowed to sell food to an Amaretz. Why? Because he's going to make the food Tameh, and he says, okay, this is based on another halacha. There's a din that you're not allowed to make pure tahor food tameh in Eretz Yisrael intentionally. You're not allowed to. This is what that opinion says. So the opinion says if a chaver, the Talmud Chacham, sells grain to an Amaretz, he's basically making tahor food tameh. That's what basically do. What? And you're not allowed to do that.
You're not going to find too many food businessmen anymore.
I understand, but he could sell to another chaver. In the olden times, you have to understand, in the time of the Gemara, in Amaretz was looked down upon. They didn't talk to them. They spat at them. They had nothing to do with them. They didn't talk to them. They didn't do business with them. They didn't intermarry with them. They were like an excommunicated band goods. So in the time of the Gemara, it was very common. Chaver did business with Chaver, and Amaretz did business with Amaretz. And in fact, in Psachim, there's like 3 pages of Gemara cursing out all the Amaretz. In that time, that was the in thing. The Baal Shem Tov changed it a lot. But in the time of the Gemara, a Chaver had nothing to do. So the halacha is, a Chaver, meaning a guy who's careful, is not allowed to sell grain to an Amaretz. Why? Because he's going to make a Tamei. So now the question is like this. Father Amaretz died, leaves over 2 kids. One's Chaver, one's Amaretz. Now, if the Chaver says to his brother, you know what? You take the wheat and I'll take the barley. You take the wet and I'll take the dry. That's not the division. The division really is half of everything. So basically what it amounts to is that the Chaver is making a selling exchange with his brother. So he's basically selling him wheat for barley. And that you're not allowed to do. You can't sell wet for dry. Because each brother has part of wet and part of dry. Each brother has wheat, and each brother inherits barley. Yeah, so if it's all wheat, okay, the brother could say, listen, we both get wheat. Yeah? You take this wheat, I take this wheat. That's fine. That's not called an exchange. You're not selling anything. You're dividing wheat, right? So when I get my part, that shows what I was supposed to get. And when you get your part, that shows what you have to get. But that's only in the same thing, which is supposed to be divided 50-50. But when the father leaves over wheat and barley, forget Amaretz, forget anything else, I get half the wheat, my brother gets half the wheat. I get half the barley, my brother gets half the barley. Okay? He gets half the wine, I get half the wine. He gets half the oil, I get half the oil. So I can't come to my brother and say, you know what, I'll take wheat and you take barley. Because really what's supposed to be is, we're supposed to divide the wheat and the barley, 50-50. No, it's only time of the Gemara.
No, but I'm saying in time of the Gemara, though, were they simple people, or did they actually dafka not want to live to
them? No, they didn't, they couldn't, they didn't want to, they weren't that meticulous in observance of mitzvahs.
Was it their fault? Or
sometimes it was mostly their fault, sometimes it wasn't. Is back on? Okay. So if the brothers have to divide wine 50%, wheat 50%, barley 50%, oil 50%, everything 50%, you can't say, if the brothers make up, forgetting Tohar, Tomei, if the brother makes up, you take the furniture, I'll take the house. That's fine, they can make up whatever they want. The problem over here is, we're talking about an exchange, and if the Chaver is telling his brother, the Amaretz, you take wheat and I take barley, so basically what he's saying is like this, I'm selling you my half of barley for your half of wheat. So what are you basically doing by that? You're selling to an Amaretz food, which is Torah, and he's going to make a Tamei, which you're not allowed to do.
Equal value.
Doesn't matter, because here, equal value would be good in dividing up in the monetary, in the financial aspect of it. But here, the problem is, we're talking about the halachic aspect of tumah and tahara. I'll give you, know where else do you have this case? I'll give you an example. What happens if a father was an idol worshipper? I'll give you a practical example. Father's a guy, okay, idol worshipper. One of his sons converts, becomes a Jew, okay? And now he has a goyish brother. Now the father dies. He says to his goyish brother, you know what? You take all the idols, and I'll take the furniture. You're not allowed to do that. Why? Because you're benefiting now from idols. Because the brother's taking the idols, you're trading for something good.
So what are you supposed to do?
You have to have him keep the idols and split the kosher stuff. No, because you're not allowed to benefit from idols. If I say to my brother, if Gerrit says to his brother, you take the idols and I'll take the furniture, so basically I'm gaining from the idols. So even though monetarily, if you're talking about financial things, you could say, you take this house, I'll take that house. You take, that you could do. But when you're talking about the Isser aspect, so then you're faced with a different problem. You're not only dealing with the monetary aspect, you're dealing with the Isser aspect. And in this case, by the brother saying, you take wheat, I take barley, basically I'm selling the guy, Dam Aretz is being sold wheat, which he's not allowed to. Now, so that's this Bryce, okay? V'tani Allah, and Rav Sheshes continues the point. And he says, the Bryce continues and says, Eise Chavar, that the Chavar who got the Tomedik oil, Menseire Falach, is allowed to burn the liquid Truma that became Tomei, Umaniachas in Yavish. And he can leave the dried that never became susceptible to tumah. Meaning as follows. The din is, truma that's tamei, you're allowed to burn. You can't eat truma that's tamei, but you're allowed to benefit from burning it. So now what happens if the Talmid Chacham, the Chaver, is left with lach, wet, and yavish dry? Now the dry, we assume, never became susceptible to tumah. Yavish over here means something that never became susceptible to tumah. So he's not allowed to tell his brother, you take lach and I take yavish. You take tamay, I take tahar. So he has to split it up. So the din is, what does the brother do? The wet stuff, which is tamay, he could burn as fuel. And the dry stuff, meaning never became susceptible to tumah, he can leave. That's what the Braisa says. So now the Gemara asks a very simple question. Why does the Talmud Chacham have to burn the wet stuff? Why can't he leave it for the next year? We learned in the time of the press, the Amma Aretz is believed to say it's not Tomei. So why can't he leave the oil that he's burning for next year? Why does he have to burn it?
Maybe because it's not an Amma Aretz.
No, the brother's an Amaretz. Talking is an Amaretz.
Oh, why can he keep it?
So what do you see from here? Rav Sheshes says that you cannot leave it for next year. What is a din? The Mishnah said a din that an Amaretz leaves it for next year, and then he's believed to say it's tahar. So the Gemara asks, what about the guy himself who took it by mistake? Can he leave it for next year and say it's tahar? So Rav Sheshes says, you see clearly from this Braisa, you cannot. Why? Because what does the Braisa say? The wet truma that's tamei, he has to burn. The question is, why do you have to burn it? Because it's tamei. But if you're allowed to leave it for the next year, why didn't you just leave it for the next year? Until the time of the presses. And at the time of the press, Amaretz is believed to say that it's tahar. So why does he have to burn it? So it shows that you're not allowed to leave it for next year. So the Gemara answers, no, I'll answer you. It's speaking b'davar she'en legas. It's speaking a type of liquid that doesn't have a press. Meaning like this. When the Mishnah said during the olive press and the wine press, it's tahor. It's only press time for olives and wine. But for instance, they used to make date beer. They used to make beer out of dates. Mm-hmm. There's no press time for dates. So over there is always tamei. So you speaking, the Gemara says, the Braisa is speaking about date beer. So over there it says you have to burn it because you can't save it for next year. Maybe you would be allowed to save it for next year, but there's no next year because there's never a time for date press. And if there's never a time for date press, then there's no way you can save it.
What is the reason, again, that he's believed during the pressing season?
Because the Chachamim said, if we're going to be too strict, nobody's going to have what to eat, and there will be this rift between the regular people and the Amoratzim and all that. So Chabad said, we're going to lift the ban. Like I said before, it's only rabbinic, don't forget. It's only because maybe they made a tameh. So during certain times of the year, the Chachamim wanted the Kohanim to have food. If all the wine and all the olives is going to become tameh, what are people going to eat?
Mm-hmm. I thought that you said that the Chachamim did business.
I understand, but still, you know, there's still, you had to go buy something. You know, there wasn't always, but like you said, most of the business people were Amoratzim. And the Amoratzim would sell to Tamid Chachamim because it was for the Tamid Chachamim's benefit. So the Gemara asks a different question. Yanichena l'regel. Why don't you just leave it for Yom Tif? Because the Gemara said before, on Yom Tif, in Amoritz is also believed to say everything is tahar. Why? Because everybody goes to the mikvah on Yom Tif. So everybody is tahar on Yom Tif. So the Gemara asks, okay, there's no press season for dates, but why don't you save it for Yom Tov and let him eat it then, b'tahara? So the Gemara says, is very simple. You're speaking of something that doesn't stay that long.
What?
No, it doesn't last that long. It's going to spoil. Oh. So therefore, you can't leave it for Yom Tov. Like the Gemara says, b'davar she'ein mishtamei l'regel. It's speaking something that won't last to Yom Tov. So therefore, what are your options? The only option is to burn it. At least benefit from the fuel. So basically, the Gemara refuted Rav Sheshis's proof, so the Gemara never came to answer the question. The question was, the Mishnah says, that if an Amoritz brings it to you after the press time, don't accept it, but the Amoritz can put it away for next year and then give it to you. So the Gemara says, what happens if you did accept it? Can you put it away for next year? And Rav Sheshis said, yes, you are not, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to. The Gemara refuted Rav Sheshis, we don't have an answer. The question remains unanswered. If you can save it for next year or not.
Well,
come answer the questions. Next is also an interesting Gemara. V'mamar refrashti l'teich revias kaidish. The Gemara says like this, now Ma'aretz is not believed for Truma, but he's believed for Hegdish. And the Gemara said before, this is one of the leniencies of Hegdish over Truma. That for Hegdish, he is believed, and Truma, he's not believed. And Amoritz. Even though Hegdish is stricter than Truma, but the din is, by Hegdish, we believe the Amoritz if he says it's Tahar, but by Truma, we don't believe him. And last week, if you remember, we learned, the reason for that is, the Chacham didn't want that Amoritz is going to say, oh, you don't trust me for Hegdish, I'll make my own Beis HaMikdash. They didn't want that. Or another opinion says, because Hegdish is so strict, that Ma'aretz will be strict about it. So now, what the Gemara says like this, what happens if an Ma'aretz gives a Kohen, who's a Talmid Chacham, Truma, but the Kohen says, the Ma'aretz says, in this Truma, there's a Hegdish amount. I separated Hegdish from this. So because he's believed for the Hegdish, he's believed on the Truma also. Even though normally he's not believed on Truma, but if you're believing him on the Hegdish, you have to believe him on Truma. That's what the Mishnah said. So the Gemara says like this, Tanan Hasam, and let me give an introduction to this Gemara. This concept we learned already once. In the time of the Gemara, people buried bodies all over the place. Then people used to not know where graves were. People used to plow fields. And dead parts of the body flew all over the place. Okay? So the Gemara made a takana. It's called Beis HaPras. Beis HaPras means a field that a grave was lost and we're afraid it was plowed. So the Chachamim said, the whole field is tameh. You can't walk anywhere in the field. Okay? Now, a guy is going to bring his Korban Pesach to the Beis HaMikdash. If you're tameh, you cannot bring a Korban Pesach. So the Gemara says, but the guy has to go through this Beis HaPras to get to the Beis HaMikdash. What should he do? He has to go to Yerushalayim. The only way he can get there is by walking through this field. How does he get there? So the Gemara gives you an advice. You can check the field. How do you check the field? What are we afraid of? There might be dead body parts plowed over all over the place. So the Gemara says like this. It's really a mini doubt. Because normally graves are deeper than the plow hits. Because a plow, the Gemara says, reaches like 12 inches down. Plows the top 12 inches. Graves, you usually 6 feet under. Okay? So it's a very minimal doubt. So the Chachamim says, you could be Baidik, you could check the base of Pras to make sure there's no bones. To bring your Korban Pesach. And the Gemara is going to say, how do you check it? But the Mishnah says like this, for Truma, checking is no good. That means, if you're carrying Truma, you cannot check the Beis HaPras and walk through it.
Check one part of it.
Check where you're walking.
How are you going to check where you're
walking? The Gemara is going to say in a second. You take a blower, and you blow away when you walk where you're walking, okay? You blow the area with a blower. Then you can see when pieces fly, you can see basically what's flying. And then you're careful not to step on those pieces. So the Gemara says, for Korban Pesach, if you have to bring your Paschal lamb, you could check the field and then walk through it. For Truma, you can't. For Truma, the checking is not good enough.
Outside of Israel, you can't bring it?
You don't have to bring Truma outside of Israel. Korban Pesach also not.
Why would such a film be in Israel?
Goyim used to live there. People buried graves. I mean, people...
Can you go? Can you kind of not walk on it, or kind of travel over it?
The amount of body part that carries tuma is the size of a barley. Size of a barley or larger can carry tuma. But not ohel. Not walking over it. And that's why we're going to learn now that you could walk over it. The problem is you might step on it. If you step on it, it's going to make you tummy. But if you blow it, and you see basically that things are flying away, you have a better picture of what's there, so then you can make sure not to step on it. So the commentator says, but you might walk over it. The answer is, it's not big enough. Here. For contacting oil, you need the greater part of the person's body. Small fragmented pieces does not have the din of oil. It has to be like the majority of the body. So for Korban Pesach, you can check the field, and for Truma not. That's what it says. Let's see it inside. Tanan, as we went to the Mishnah, made them Beishami and Beisilo. Both Beishami and Beisilo agree. Shabbat can la'isi Pesach. You could check Beis HaPras, this doubtful field, for people that want to do a Korban Pesach, but in Beit can la'ichli Truma. You cannot check it for people that eat Truma. And the Gemara right away asks, my Beitkin, what do you mean checking? How do you check? So the Gemara says, Amar of Yudam Shmuel, Menafech Odom Beis HaPras, a person blows, he blows the field, Uvahelech, and he keeps walking.
Huh?
It says they blow with bellows. You know the handmade bellows that the blacksmiths, goldsmiths used to use? to flame the fire. So
how far is this walk?
It depends how big the field is.
Think with an animal, think with like a ride a donkey over.
Yeah.
Mm.
No? Yeah.
So you can just, you can walk, you can ride an animal over.
Right. But walking the field would touch it. Or moving it with his foot. But I think riding an animal wouldn't be a problem. Because we're only afraid of the fragmented pieces. Now, you have to remember, this is only a doubt to begin with. This is only a doubt to begin with. Not for sure. Beisapras means we're not sure. If you're sure there's tumah, checking is not going to help. This is because there's a doubt. So the Chachamim said, for Karban Pesach, and we'll see why, you could check the field and then you can walk in it. For Truma, it doesn't help. And the Gemara says, La'eisi Pesach, I'm sorry, V'rabchia, a second opinion. So Rav Yehuda Mishmol says, how do you check it? By blowing, and then you walk it. Rachia bar Abba Mishmei de'ula amar, beis aprash nidash. There's another way of checking it. What does it mean in the Mishnah, you check the field to see if you can walk? So Rav Yehuda Mishmol says, you blow it with bellows, and then you can walk. Rachia says in the name of Ula, no. You know how you check the field? If so many people trampled it already, if so many people walked in the field, you can assume that there's nothing left of fragmented of bones. So all the Mishnah says was you check the field. So the Gemara said, how do you check the field? So one opinion says by blowing it with bellows, then you walk. And the second opinion says, you check the field to make sure how many people walked in it. If a lot of people walked in the field, then you can assume it was pushed to the side or it's trampled into the ground and therefore it's not a problem.
But if it's like a holiday, then it's Musa.
What? The bellows? Yeah. He's speaking, you're doing it before Shabbos. Sure.
And then on Shabbos you start, you can't do that.
Yeah, but they didn't travel on Shabbos. They couldn't carry, they couldn't travel, they didn't do anything. This is speaking during the week, not in Shabbos. You're right, Shabbos, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. You have moksa, you have carrying, you have a million different things. And then the Gemara explains now, why for Pesach the Chachamim say you could check the field, and for Truma not? So it says like this, La'esi Pesach, for the people that are doing the Karban Pesach, you're allowed to do it. Why? If you don't bring a Karban Pesach, the punishment is Karis. The punishment is Karis, which is capital punishment by God. So because Karban Pesach is so strict, if you don't do it, the Chachamim wanted to make sure everybody's going to do it. So they removed their ban, which is a rabbinic doubtful ban on this field, and they said if you check the field, it's good enough, and you can bring your Karban Pesach. But to eat truma, you won't eat it. It's a big deal. You won't eat. There's no mitzvah to eat truma. I mean, you're allowed to eat truma. You make a bracha when you eat truma, but you don't get punished for karis. So because it's not that important, Chachamim said, go the long way or do something else. You can't walk through this field. You can't even check the field. So he says, La'ech l'truma. But the people that are on the way to eat truma, le'hamidu devrem b'mkei misa. They didn't. Yeah, so he says, when there's death in the hands of Hashem, but the Mefarshim explain what he means is, there's no time when you have to eat truma. You can eat truma whenever you want. So there's no rush. If there's no rush, go the long way or do it a different way. But for Korban Pesach, you're limited on the 14th of Nisan. You have to do it that day. You can't do it any other day. So over there, the Chachamim were lenient. Now the Gemara asks like this. What happens if you check the field for your Korban Pesach? Which you're allowed to do, right?
Yeah.
Can you now eat truma or not? For truma, we say checking the field is not good enough.
Right.
But if you already checked it for your Pesach, can you now eat truma with that? To eat truma by itself, the Chacham said you can't check a field like that. But to eat a Korban Pesach, they allowed you to check the field to make sure there's no truma. So now the question is, if you checked it for Pesach, can you rely on that to give truma free ride that you can eat truma also? So the Gemara says, the question was asked. But if somebody checked it to eat this Korban Pesach, Mal Shayyachu Betrumasa, can he eat truma now because of that? In other words, truma get a free ride with the Korban Pesach. On its own, you don't get it. But now that you check for a Korban Pesach that you're allowed to check, and you walk through the field, and for Korban Pesach you're tarred, so can you already eat truma the same way already? So the Gemara says two opinions. Ula Amar, Ula says, Badak lepischai. If you check for the Korban Pesach, Mota lecho betruma, you can eat truma. He says, once you checked already for Korban Pesach, that for truma it's good. Rabbi Bar Ula Amar, Rabbi Bar Ula is stricter, and he says, no. Badak lepischai, if you check for the Korban Pesach, Asa lecho betrumas, you cannot eat the truma. It's only good for the Korban Pesach. That means you're 100% tahar for Korban Pesach, but you're not tahar to eat truma. Ula says, the first opinion, if it's good enough for Pesach, it's good enough for truma. So the Gemara continues and says, Amaleo Savam, this old man, obviously he was a scholar, this old man said to Rabbi Bar Ula, who said it's no good. Ula said it's good. Rabbi Bar Ula said it's not good. So he said to Rabbi Bar Ula, Latif lekaled de Ula, don't argue on Ula, because the Tanan Kavasi, we learned in our Mishnah like Ula. What did Ula basically say? For Truma itself, you can't check the field. But once you checked it for Pesach, then it's good enough for Truma. So this old guy said to Rabbi Bar Ula, of course it's good. How can you argue on Ula? It's a Mishnah. Why? Our Mishnah says like this. The Maharitz is not believed on Truma. Right? To say it's Tahar. But if he says it's Kedesh mixed into it, he's believed even for the Truma. That means on Truma alone, he's not believed. But once he's believed on the Hegdish, then the Truma gets a free ride with the Hegdish. Even though Truma alone, he's not believed for. What does it say in our Mishnah? If an Amoritz after the pressing season says, this is Tahar, if it's Truma, he's not believed. Hegdish, he is believed, to say it's not Tamei. So the Gemara, the Mishnah said, what happens though, if the Ma'aret says, in this barrel of Truma, part of it is Hegdish. So the din is, he's believed on the whole thing, that it's not Tamei. I for Truma, you just got through saying he's not believed. What's the answer? Because in the same barrel, if he's believed on Hegdish, Truma gets a free ride. Just same thing over here. If the field is good enough and pure for Pesach, the same field would be pure for Truma also. Free ride. And that's what he says. Tidnam, because we learned in our Mishnah, if the Ma'arit says to the Chaver, I put a Revius of Hegdish inside this barrel, Naman, he's believed even for the Truma. So he says, Amma, what do you see from here? Me the Haman Ahakadish, just because he's believed for Hegdish, Mehemin Amiya Truma, he's believed also for the Truma. Even though for Truma itself he's not believed. But if you believe him on part of it, you believe him on all of it. And therefore, if this field is pure for Pesach, it's pure also for Truma.
Why was he believed by them correctly? Because he won't lie?
Because it's too severe that he won't lie. Or, like we said before, if you're not going to believe him by Hagdish, that means they say, oh, you don't even let me into the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to make our own. And Chacham didn't want the split that an Amar should create, which is against Halacha, obviously. But it's interesting that in one barrel, if it's Truma, he's not believed. If it's Hagdish, he is believed. But our Mishnah says, if Hagdish and Truma are mixed, he's believed not only on the Hegdish, but he's even believed on the Truma. That means, if you believe in part, you believe him all. What do you see from here? That if a guy's field that he walked through was good enough for Pesach, it's good enough for Truma. Because Truma and Hegdish, Truma gets a free ride with the Hegdish. And therefore, if the guy already checked the field, either by people trampling on it or just blowing around, and he walks through the field for the Korban Pesach, he can even go eat Truma. Even though, if the guy checked the field, he didn't have a Korban Pesach. He just checked the field for Truma. It was worthless. He would be Tameh. But if it's good for Hegdish, then it automatically became good for Truma.
A 2-for-1 deal.
2-for-1 deal.
If we, with a little step on the something behind the
other. And he knows it's a bone?
Yeah,
then he's tummy. Yeah.
So he can't have the problem.
Correct.
That's how he came in and then asked for the Pesach
Sheni. Right. Well, then he would have to bring Pesach Sheni, yeah. But we don't, yeah, but because it's only a rabbinic doubt. It's only a rabbinic doubt. Maybe there's a grave there. And maybe it's a tiny piece. And maybe, it's all rabbinic doubts. And if it's a rabbinic doubt, the Chachamim were lenient under certain circumstances.
Like what? Walking on a minefield?
Yeah. In the olden times, it was. One of the reasons why you need monuments on a grave is not only, you know, to visit a grave and to know who's buried where. Yeah, if you learn American history, in the gold rush in the 1800s, when everybody was running to America, to California, right? A lot of people died along the way. Yeah? What did people, they just buried them. There's no notification next of kin. How are they going to tell somebody at the other end, in New York, that somebody died in Arizona? I mean, there's no communications. That's why you have all these, so what you can call weird cases in the Gemara. A guy died, and all of a sudden, a kid from a different city that nobody ever knew about says, I'm his son. I mean, all these crazy cases that don't exist today, but in those days they were very common. In the time of the Gemara, a guy was allowed to have many wives, right? A lot of times, one wife didn't know that another wife existed. A guy was possible to have a wife in one city, and another city, and another city, another. There's nothing wrong. Halachically, there's nothing wrong with it. He married all the wives. It doesn't say anywhere one wife has to know that the other wife. As long as you can support him, there's no problem. So, the guy dies, and a half a year later, a kid from a different city that nobody ever saw before comes and says, hey, I'm his son. Meaning, I get part of the part of the fortune, yeah. Part of the barley and the wheat. And then you have a whole Mishnah in Yevamos. It talks about, okay, a guy comes, you see there's four brothers, and this new kid pops up. And he says, I'm also a son. So there's a difference in din, by the way. What happens if one of the four brothers say, yeah, I know of him. And the other three say, what are you talking about? There's no such guy. He's not our brother. It's a whole din of Yerusha. He has to split his part with his brother. His newfound brother. Because he admitted to him.
But the other guys don't.
No. But it's fine there because he's not a brother. There's a lot of dinim involved of how much, you know, that's not relevant to Agumah. I'm just saying it's a case that were crazy cases. In the olden times, it was very common. The grays were all over the place. So at that time, there was tumah all over the place. And not only that, people had to know where they're allowed to walk or not, because if you had korbanos, you had to go into the Beis HaMikdash. If you're eating truma, you know, you're not allowed to be tamei. So they had all these difficulties in figuring it out, what was tamei, what was not tamei. And therefore, the halacha was, you really had to mark graves, that people should know that it's tuma. And you shouldn't go here.
The Hicks and the Hicktowns, they bury them in their backyard.
Sure. And then somebody goes in there later. What do you know? In fact, the Gemara says that the Goyim that lived in Eretz Yisrael used to bury when they had a miscarriage, and a lot of them miscarried in those days. They used to bury them in the house.
In the house?
Yeah. And they used to dig up, they didn't have the tiled floors carpeted. They had earthenware floors, right? They would bury them underneath. They'd just dig up a little thing, a whole little hole, put it, then bury it, and that's it. And there was also tumah. So it was very complicated, the dinum of tumah. So there's a doubtful tumah, definite tumah, biblical doubt, rabbinic doubt. So when it came to Pesach, because Pesach is punishable by Kodesh, the Chacham said, listen, because of us, you shouldn't bring a Korban Pesach and be liable to Kodesh. We're not interested. We're going to lift the ban. Obviously, you can't just walk there. You have to check it. So either with the blower or by the fact that many people walk there, so you can assume that there's no tumah there. So if you check it, in one of the two ways, the Gemara says to check, so then you're allowed to do it.
They never mentioned anything.
For Truma, so Truma, you're not in any particular rush to eat it. You can eat it later, you can eat it, do whatever. So we're not going to permit you to walk in the field just by checking it, because it's a doubtful Truma. So the Gemara's question was, if you checked it for Pesach, can you already check it for, is it already good for Tumah? So Ulla said yeah, and Rabbi Bar Ulla said no. So he said, from our Mishnah, it comes out clearly that you could. Because our Mishnah says, he's not believed for Trumah, the Amoritz, but he's believed for Hegdish. But if Hegdish and Trumah are mixed, and because you believe him on Hegdish, you believe him on Trumah. So the same thing over here, in the same walking, you're believing him for Korban Pesach, so then you have to believe him for Truma.
Could you write over it?
But as we were talking about before, L'cheri, you would be allowed to.
You would be allowed to.
Why not?
Okay. But they don't mention this.
Because they're talking about walking. Because
okay.
Riding is not going to, you know, sort of be doing anything.
So then you have to walk, or you can...
No.
You don't have to.
But you know, the Talmud Chassid used to go to the Alter Rebbe, I think it was. He never wanted to go by his horse. He only walked. And when he got old, he couldn't walk anymore, he stopped going. So Chassidim said to him, okay, you can't walk, we understand, but go on the horse, I mean, go on the wagon. What's the? He said, I should share my walking to the Rebbe with a horse. It's either all or none. I'm not going to share it with a horse. So he stopped going.
Should carry the horse.
Can't carry the horse. He carried a horse. There is a regel. I mean, the fact that we learned at the beginning of Chagiga, the first Mishnah says a kid who's able to walk is obligated to go up to the Beis HaMikdash because it's a Shalosh Regolim. A crippled guy can't walk because it's called Regolim. If you can't walk, but if you're able to walk, that doesn't mean you have to walk. You can go by car, plane.
Half blind.
Yeah. Okay.